This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
From our corporate merger file today, we lead with Game of Phones. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. There's news today of merger talks between two telecommunications equipment makers, Nokia of Finland and Alcatel-Lucent of France. While negotiations could always break down, Alcatel stock is up 12% in Paris now, Nokia down 5.6% on the Helsinki exchange. And there are a few strands of American DNA in there. Lucent is a descendant of the old AT&T, Bell Labs, the people who invented the laser. In our partner newsroom in London, BBC business reporter Russell Padmore is following this. Good morning, Russell.
Good morning to David.
So tell me about the logic of this possible merger.
What it's really all about is imagine these companies build the systems that are the backbone of the internet, the wires, the cables behind the scenes that we don't really pay much attention to. What Nokia and Alcatel-Lucent getting together would mean is that they would create a company which would have huge clout, particularly in China. And that really is going to put them in a position to compete with Ericsson of Sweden and Huawei Technologies of China. And Nokia, effectively, by merging with Alcatel, would take on some of the contracts that Verizon and AT&T have in China. It would effectively also cement that business with those American wireless carriers, those cell phone companies.
Now, many people listening remember the Nokia brand, but we also need to remember it's not what it used to be.
No, at one time, Nokia or Nokia, this company from Finland, was the world's biggest maker of cell phone handsets. In 2014, it sold its mobile phone and the tablet division to Microsoft. And that left the company sitting on a huge pile of cash, nearly $6 billion. Nokia employs still 55,000 people across the world. And ultimately, they're looking at China for being the future of the development of many more people accessing the internet and needing the equipment to do it.
The BBC's Russell Padmore in London. Thank you for this.
David, thanks.
So AT&T originally begot Lucent, but in the years that followed, Lucent spun off its consumer phones to VTech, a brand that you see around. Its business phone business went to Avaya. Now this morning, J.P. Morgan and Wells Fargo will kick off a week of profit reports from the big banks. A preview came last week when word came that General Electric will break up and sell off the seventh largest bank, GE Capital. Marketplace's Stan Alcorn has more on the state of mega banking.
GE's announcement that it's spinning off most of its $500 billion banking business teaches us two things.
The primary lesson is if you don't have to be a bank, don't be one. That's what GE came to the realization of.
Fred Cannon at Keefe, Bryant & Woods says being a bank is about a third less profitable than it was before the financial crisis, thanks to more regulation and higher capital requirements. Lesson number two, look at who's buying what GE is selling.
The vast majority of those assets are going into smaller institutions.
It's not the do-everything giants like J.P. Morgan, but regional banks and specialized non-banks that Cannon expects to grow profits fastest. But bank analyst Nancy Bush says there is one area where the so-called universal banks have an edge, at least this quarter, trading on the ups and downs in the currency and commodities markets.
So the positive surprises are likely to come for the, quote, universal banks.
But she says the same goes for negative surprises, if any banks got those trades wrong. I'm Stan Alcorn for Marketplace.
Let's check the numbers. The 100 share index in London is up 0.1%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down in the 0.1% range. The Hang Seng index in Hong Kong, quite volatile recently, is down 1.6% overnight. The 10-year Treasury yield is down at 1.91%. The other day, I was talking to a colleague who is sweating his taxes. Radio producer Josh Wu fills in here as a director on the Marketplace Morning Report. And the thing is, during the 2014 tax year, Josh won big on a TV game show. His tax return now signed and hopefully delivered. I wanted to check in with Josh to see how it went. Hiya, Josh.
Hi there, David.
When last you and I were chatting, you were sweating your taxes because you'd won what? On what?
$41,400 on Wheel of Fortune.
So in tax year 2014, you got this windfall. I wouldn't say it fell out of the sky. It was probably your skill. And of course, you set aside no extra money on estimated taxes. And now you're left holding the bag. What happened?
I got some advice from a contestant who won about the same amount I did. And he said, okay, you should set aside about, X thousand dollars for your taxes. And I go, oh, okay. So when I got the check about, I think it was 4 months after the show aired, they withheld 7% and they sent me the difference.
Okay, so the 7% is for the state taxes in California. But that leaves what you might owe extra on the federal. And because you talked to a previous contestant, you knew you better set aside some cash?
That's right. And I basically had to run to the CPA right away and figure out how much that was. A safe estimate is half of what you've won is going to go to Uncle Sam.
After all the taxes, after the Wheel of Fortune last year, you had some extra. You probably had some idea about what you're going to do with that?
Well, the one promise I made to myself, David, was that since I'm a student of Japanese swordsmanship, I was going to buy myself a iaito, which is a dull practice sword that feels like the real thing, it just can't cut.
Okay, so what does that run?
Oh, about a couple hundred. You don't go into four figures until you get to the stuff that actually can cut.
All right. So then with the rest, what are you going to do?
I'm sure I'll find a use for it at some point. I'm not sure yet. It's only been a year, after all. I've still got time to figure it out.
Josh, you actually saved it?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. An inspiration to us all. So, Josh, just before we go, give me a hint how you win on one of these shows.
You get really, really, really lucky.
Thank you, Josh Wu, occasionally one of my coworkers here. He directs the Marketplace Morning Report. Josh, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Josh and the wonderful Katie Long are the directors who are typically whispering in my ear just about now that we're running 10 seconds over and we need to kill the staff credits. But not today. Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, Meg Kramer, and sometimes Josh. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.